Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. Eric is also our Detroit Magazine's 2020 runner-up to most beloved sports columnist or blogger. And in a couple months, they're going to have a new vote coming out, so you guys are going to have to all log on and vote for him again. Eric, I hope your eyes aren't gouged out from asking Coach Campbell the wrong question or your kneecaps gnawed off or whatever he was claiming he'd do.
My teeth are all still in my mouth.
Good. And it's been a busy day for the Lions. We all knew that he was hired yesterday on Wednesday.
Correct.
And, you know, this was the big introduction today. So take it away. Let's start talking Dan Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's been lots and lots of news. You know, I've had to put up some new walls in my house after that press conference because just people are running right through them.
Excited by it. Yeah. Definitely a Spielman hire. You would think, although, you know what, I have to ask a question of you.
Yeah.
They didn't do a lot of talking about Chris Spielman in today's press conference.
No.
I mean, they didn't have to, no, but it's, you know, it's interesting that his name wasn't coming up at all, but it definitely seems like it has the Spielman seal of approval on it.
Yeah, I think that's by design, and I don't think we're going to hear Chris Spielman's name a ton, but I do believe he's going to have his hands in a lot of cookie jars throughout the organization without ever really, you know, being responsible for anything. It's a unique situation that he's in, and it affords him some unique opportunities to influence the team with like no responsibility at all. Like, it's really kind of a cushy job.
It's a great job to have.
Yeah. When things go wrong, it's never going to be pointed at him. He's always going to be the advisor and not the guy who actually made the decision. And so, like, I was trying to think of a good comparison for like what type of role he has within the organization. And the only thing I could think of is he's kind of like the consigliere in the mafia, where he's the guy who has like all this power and he understands everything. He's watching and sees all this stuff going on. And he may be like talking to other teams and like, laying groundwork, but he's never actually the one assigning the orders. He's never actually the one, you know, making the decision or executing the assignments. He's going to be overseen and part of everything. And I think he'll be in the shadows for a lot of it. And even though, yeah, this hire, it definitely smelled of Chris Spielman more than any other person in the organization. You know, it's a very interesting, you know, like leading up to the hire of Holmes and leading up to the hire of Campbell. The Lions have laid out like, this is what we're looking for. And then when these guys get hired, they hit on like almost all these things, right? When Holmes was brought in and they asked Holmes what he was looking for in a head coach, I mean, it was, he basically listed everything that Dan Campbell does well, right? And so it was really no surprise, but it does make me wonder if like some of that was like planned out and they're like, okay, this is the guy we're going with. These are the attributes. So if we have to say this is what we're looking for, this is what we say, or if that's actually what they were looking for. And I mean, you hope it's the latter. You hope this is that they were, that they want guys to check off X, Y, and Z. And if you kind of look back at the totality of the search, they've held pretty consistent to what they've said, leaders of men and whatnot. And Campbell checks that, right? You watch that press conference today, all 90 minutes of it. It was like nothing we've really seen here in Lions media before, like ever, right? I mean, as long as I can remember, I've never seen someone get in front of a podium and then just openly talk the way that he did. I mean, his opening statement was 19 minutes long, right? That's just lunacy. Like when they sent us
sometimes when I think about this podcast, you might be able to go for 19 minutes straight without stopping. Not that crazy.
That's accurate. And then when they they typed out everything that he wrote for it, and they sent it out to all the beat guys. And it was over 13,000 words.
I hope it was talk to text. Nobody was, they had no stenographer in there writing everything down.
I don't know how they do it. I would hope they have a program that does it, but they do a pretty impressive. I mean, they got to go through and edit it and like double check stuff, make sure things are spelled right and make sure things make sense, because it becomes a public, we use this for our articles. So what a task it was for the Lions PR department today. And they did a great job. It was a lot. There was a ton to unpack, and I feel like I'm going to miss stuff. Well,
we got weeks after this where you can cover it back up. So I wouldn't worry about that right now. Let's get all out there that we can right now.
Yeah. So the gist of it, I guess, kind of like the main points that kind of stood out to me was he is more of a leader and like the captain of a ship, then he is going to be a guy who's going to be like designing plays for the offense, right?
Does that concern you, or no. is that fine? Okay.
No, it doesn't concern me as long as the guy who is designing them is capable, right? And that's where it gets tricky, right? You look at a guy like John Harbaugh in Baltimore. He was never a play caller. He's never been a play caller. He still isn't a play caller, but he puts the right people in the right spots. And he understands enough about what's supposed to happen that he can allow someone to, he can delegate responsibility to someone, allow them to do their job and just kind of overseeing. He's not putting his hands on it. One of the things with Patricia was that he was constantly putting his hands on Corey Unlin's playbook, right? Corey Unlin was the play caller, but you would often see Patricia talking over him or calling plays himself. And so there was always a power struggle there. You won't have that. And so that's, you get that kind of out of the way, but with every positive, there is a flip side to that coin. Like, but you have to make sure that you're getting the right coordinators then in place. Right. So that's where it does get tricky. So I do like that he is this leader of men. I do like that he is a former player, right? One of the ways that I think he can get away with some of his weaknesses is because he's going to get respect from players because he played in the league, right? And not just because he played in the league, but he played in the league for a long time, right? It wasn't like he was just some flash in the pan. I would play a season and then I'm done. He played for quite a long time. So
10 years.
But he's also played for Bill Parcells, and he's all, you know what I mean? Like he's been in the right, he's made the right connections over that time. And then when he goes into coaching, he's afforded this opportunity to be the interim coach. And when he doesn't stay around in Miami, after the interim gig doesn't work, Sean Payton is immediately calling him saying, look, I want you to come in and I want you to be the assistant head coach. I want you to run the tight ends group. But more importantly, he wanted to give Campbell the opportunity to experience what it was like to actually be a coach. So we found out today from Campbell that Peyton had Campbell running team meetings sometimes. He had him sitting in on things that were beyond just the tight end room. He was sitting in on larger meetings, and he was participating on a more global team concept than just like being the tight ends coach where you're sitting in the tight ends with trying to get those guys to work. He had a much larger set of responsibilities, and Peyton recognized that Campbell liked what he had done got a taste for that head coach as an interim, and he wanted to do it again. And Sean said, I'm going to help you get there. Right. And so Sean comes from the Bill Parcells tree. Campbell comes from the Bill Parcells tree. So there's this concept that these guys all have, like where when you have these coaches that all come from the same, coaching trees, they tend to be bonded over certain things. Right. So he's learned a lot about Sean Payton, and I know people are going to look at him and they're going to say he's this 6'5", 280 pound rough and tumble guy who is screaming about, you know, biting kneecaps off and kicking people in the teeth, and that he's just going to want to be a smash mouth old school guy. But if you get past that and you listen to like some of the other things that he's talking about, you can see that he's not just a put your nose to the grindstone and go guy. Now, he's still got that, but he recognizes that it's a passing league. He recognizes that you're going to have to be have an effective quarterback at the position. He recognizes that while Parcells, who taught him, was the foundation was built in the running game, he's also been with Sean Payton, who's arguably the most aggressive coach in the league offensively for the last 5 years. And so he's picked up on that stuff too. And he's talked about that. Hey, while I was based in Parcells, Payton has influenced me quite a bit. So like, he's not going to be scared to be aggressive. And then when you combine that with Holmes, where they're the Rams front office was extremely aggressive, you now have two figureheads here that are willing to be aggressive. And if they see they're something that they want aggressive. To go after it. Yeah. Both of them. I mean, where they come from. Les Snead is one of the most aggressive GMs in the game, and Sean Payton, one of the most aggressive coaches in the game. And these are their disciples. Right. And so it's, if you don't like the kind of vanilla concepts that we've seen the last 5 years, you're going to be excited about this group, because they don't seem to, nothing points to them going in and saying this is going to be a vanilla, right? They seem to have an idea of what they want to do, and they want to attack it. So I don't think Campbell's going to be a guy that's just going to be this ground and pound type guy. And just like while Campbell, or just like while Holmes, is his background is rooted in old school scouting, he's not shying away from analytics. So we've got two guys here in place that understand the foundations of what their jobs are, but also know that you have to embrace the concepts of the now. And so that's, I think, what really makes this pairing exciting to me, even though they definitely have their flaws and they're definitely in their first times. And so there's going to be mistakes that are going to be made, but I like the foundation plus what they've learned in the past half decade on how to be, how to approach their job.
All right. Interesting. Let me break this up a little bit. You were talking mm-hmm. about Campbell's background, I probably lost perfect timing on this one. More interesting Dan Campbell playing fact that he returned 5 kicks in his career, or in 2006, was it 2006, was the 16th highest ranked tight end in fantasy points.
I think the kicks is, I don't know, because
he's just recovering kicks. It looked like 5 that, returns.
That's what I was thinking, like pooch kicks. Yeah, probably pooch kicks. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so maybe the fantasy one's more interesting. What I find interesting is that he was a third-round pick. And you think about – he was a blocking tight end. And you think about like that today. You wouldn't see a blocking tight end taken in the first 100 picks today. It just doesn't happen.
Right? Undrafted free agents.
But this is a guy that was valued as for what he could do. And they thought enough of him that they took him in the third round. So interesting playing career. That's for sure. Different than I think it looked on the surface. You know, when you watched him play, he looked like a blocking tight end. And that was about it. But there was actually more nuance, I think, to his game than we actually knew. Now, if we roll back into the coaching part though, I think one of the things that's going to help motivate him is that he talked about the fact that when he played in Detroit, one of his favorite parts about it was the people that he interacted with outside of the organization, right? The fans, people in his neighborhood, you know what I mean? Like people that out in public that he ran into, like he talked glowingly on not just the press conference, but in like, other interviews as well about the fact that he really appreciated the type of people that were that he came across in his 4 years or 3 years in Detroit with the appreciated type of people in the city and what in the type of human beings that they were. And so that left a really strong impression on him. And so when he had an opportunity to get a coaching job, Detroit was one of the ones that he said, if the job comes open, I want to take a play at it. Right. And so I know people look at this and they say, hey, Detroit was the only team looking at him as a head coach in this cycle. Sure. But in the last 4 years, he's had six head coaching interviews. So it's not like Detroit was the only team interested in him. And if we go back to 2018, he was he was one of the final two people for the Indy job that eventually went to Frank Wright. So this is a guy that's just coming out of the woodwork. That's never called a play. Who's a rookie guy. He's got more experience. He's been a guy who teams have looked at in the past. He's not as raw, I think, as he's often being portrayed in the national media or by people who haven't looked up at his background. So he likes Detroit. He likes the people. He put Detroit on a list and said, I want to coach there if I can. And so when the opportunity comes up, before he even gets an interview, he sent the Lions a binder that had his philosophies on football, coaches that he was interested in bringing in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he sent them ahead of time a dossier on what he wanted to do as a professional. Then he has the interview and he knocks that out of the park. And so now he's setting himself up to be here. This is a job that he came out and he said he wanted this job. And he was like, I wanted this job. And he's like, I wanted it bad. Right. So he was on the 0-16 team. So he understands the problems that this team has been through in the past. He understands the
team. You heard his full disclosure about that, though. He said he spent most of that season back home after week one.
Sure. I mean, but that team
was... he was still part of that team. He still knew all those guys. I'm sure he was still in contact with a lot of them and, and had to commiserate with them for 17 weeks of 16 losses.
My point is that he's familiar with the fan
base. Losing. He's familiar with the fan base. I liked it. He won the interview. Certainly, sure. If you look around the internet, there's a lot of positivity about, you want to run through a wall for this guy for that interview, and I'm sure that spilled out in the interview, from the press conference. I'm sure that same Dan Campbell spilled out in the interview with the Lions, and it would be hard to think that they weren't impressed by him, especially if you're sending him a binder beforehand, showing him his passion, and that's all good. But we're still, we're still a ways away from seeing what he's truly capable of. And
you're not going to know. You're not going to know right now. You're not going to know for 6 months, 9 months, 9 months probably, what he's actually going to be able to do. Right. So it's going to be a long wait. But again, I think the thing that I'm taking away from this is that, I walked away from that interview saying if there were preconceived notions about him, a lot of those should have been shut down. And I know it was a rah-rah thing and it was fun and there was full disclosure. He was very open about things, but like the concept that he has makes sense to me. And I appreciate that. I think there's opportunity for growth. Now, how quickly that growth comes is to be determined.
Let's see.
Right?
Yeah, this is stuff we've talked about a lot, when we complained about Patricia and all that. Like he said, he wants to play strong defense. Most importantly, he wants to run the football, but he does understand that this is a passing league. And he did point out that he will adapt to the situation. He'll adapt to the players he has.
He never did.
And that's great. And that's exactly what we want and exactly stuff we've talked about for years and haven't been getting. But, once the fire you know, once we're in the middle of the fire, like we'll like you said, we won't know for a while, and there's going to be mistakes. Like, how good is he going to be at adjusting? Mm-hmm. You know, well, that's going to be key.
Mm-hmm. It is, but the fact that he brought up simple things like, I want to get my guys, I want their best attribute against the defense's weakness. And he just casually said, look, if I can get Swift matched up against the linebacker, I'm going to take that, and I'm going to shift him out in the slot, and I'm going to take that all day. That wasn't even a thought in the last regime. Honestly, it wasn't. And he talked about, like, hey, if my best blitzer is a corner, I'm going to run corner blitzes all the time. And, like, that was never a concept in the last coaching staff. It was, this is my scheme. You fit to my scheme. He's completely flipped that around and said that having a good scheme is important, but we're going to adapt it to fit these players. And that's something that Patricia never did. And he said he wanted to, but he never did. And I mean, it was painful that he never did it. We talked about it in week one, and after week two, how we're like, it's the same stuff, and he's just not doing anything different. And that's when we knew the writing was on the wall. Campbell said more in this one press conference than Patricia said in 3 years about specifically how to take advantage of some mismatches. And you have to like that concept. You have to like that idea. And that's really where I'm the most, I guess, impressed. Yes, the rah-rah's fun. Yes, he's going to have lots of fun quotes, but it's the concepts and the things that he said about on the football side that are really the things that are appealing to me. And so that's kind of where I'm at.
No, it's a nice break from Patricia, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I want, actually a couple more things. One thing I wanted to point out was that he got a 6-year deal. Okay.
Yeah, we probably should talk about that.
Yeah.
A little bit longer than a 4-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
But is this just the trend of the NFL? Is just this the way we're going?
Well, that's a good question, right? Because Holmes got a 5-year deal, which was looking more standard. And I believe 5 years have been the standard, but is 6 years going to be the new one? Yeah. And I've been asked a couple questions like, what are my feelings on it? My feelings on it are, I don't care, because it doesn't affect the cap. So it doesn't affect the team. So I don't care what the Fords decide they want to pay him. I don't care what the money, honestly, I don't care what the money amount is. I don't care how many years he's got. None of that matters to me because it doesn't impact how the team operates. You know what I mean?
Well, I do. But this is one thing that was popping into my head the other day, because they still have to pay Patricia and Quinn. And I don't know what those dollar amounts are. I don't expect you to have that either.
No.
And we know the Ford family is, you know, extremely wealthy, you know, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Ford Hamp, I'm sure she's not hurting for cash, but, you know, I don't want to hear a couple of years from now or even later this year, it's like, well, they went with Campbell and they went with Holmes and neither of them had any experience. So that made them a lot cheaper than a lot of the other options out on the market, because they're still paying off. They like they like these two guys, but, you know, they're still concerned about paying off the other contracts. And then it's like, oh, that's why they went with these two guys. Mm. And that was also my concern about the 6-year contract. Is it a 6-year contract because it's at a lower average annual value, which is actually no big deal to me for the same thing. It doesn't count against the cap or whatever, but it's like, I just hope they didn't just go with these two guys because they're the less expensive option. You know?
So let me put this out there. And this isn't going to help you. This is actually probably going to further your conspiracy theory. But Burkett did say that Holmes's price tag was cheaper than some of the other options.
Sure, he doesn't. Yeah, he was never a GM before, and he's never been above director of college. It's kind of understandable.
Exactly. Right. And I think that, like, people hear that and they jump to that conclusion of, oh, if he's cheaper, then there was a reason. The reason he was cheaper was because he didn't have as much experience, right? Like, you look at a guy like Ed Dodds, who probably was asking for more. And that's why he's probably still heading back to Indy. He wants the right situation and the right money, and he's not getting it just yet. He'll get it. Ed Dodds is going to be a GM somewhere down the line. And that's that's fine, but it didn't work out for what the Lions were looking for, right? And but again, the other guys, they probably have higher price tags, and that's fine. It doesn't matter to me at all. And I don't think they're making the decisions on that based on how they've spent in the past. They're not scared to open up the pocketbook, in my opinion, and they've shown that they're willing to spend. And so it doesn't impact me. The one conspiracy though that I kind of have here is when you're looking at a 6-year deal, it's because in my opinion, or my kind of, you know, gut feeling here is that you're giving them a 6-year deal because you're expecting them to be there to be a couple of years of rebuild. Now they want to say retool, and that's fine. I don't care if it's retool. I don't care rebuild. If it's rebuild. It doesn't matter.
I thought Holmes said rebuild.
I think he's, I don't know. I remember they kept
it's not
they
important. It's a rebuild.
Yeah, they tried to pivot to retool quite a bit. But they're going to have to overdo certain positions. They're going to have to reallocate money in different ways. The cap dropping is going to make it even more challenging to try and do this. And so there's a side of me that says big contracts are going to be potentially problematic. And some of your big contracts you can't get out of, and some of your big contracts you can. And so that there's some worry there that they might be willing to shed bigger contracts in order, because they're looking at this as saying, hey, we might not be competitive until 2022, right? I hope that they have, Holmes actually said, it may take us a while to retool the roster, but it doesn't mean we're not going to be competitive. And that's a great concept. But I hope that they don't go into this, essentially trying to literally blow everything up, because I don't think you need to do that in the NFL. You look at how some of these teams recover or retool quickly, and where it only takes like a couple of years and then they're in the playoffs. It's because they don't blow it up. It's because they're very strategic in the moves that they make, and they're willing to be bold. And so I'm hoping that that's the path they do. The longer contract, though, makes me worried that they're giving them a couple years grace period, and then they're saying, okay, then I'm going to worry about your 4 years, or your evaluation period is really going to be the 4 years after the first two. That I'm hoping is not the case. That's kind of like my worry is that's the case, but I'm hoping that's not. So if it's, I think there's enough pieces that if you're creative, there's about 8 guys on this roster who have big contracts, so I think you could lose, and you can fill in with a bunch of other younger players or cheaper free agents and try and make this team competitive this year, build the next year, make them even more competitive. And then you're really getting that. You could, if you do it right, a couple of years, you're going to be in good shape. But I'm really hoping that I don't see like a complete, like we're starting over. I don't think they need to do that. There's still some pieces in place. When the thing that
dealing Stafford a sign of, and we're not going to talk about whether they should or not.
Yeah.
If they deal Stafford to you though, is that a sign of starting over?
Yeah. 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 I think that would be, I think if they were to lose Stafford, that would mean that they're saying, we're starting over and we're not going to be competitive for a while, and that's a tough spot. That's not the approach that I would take. And I know dealing Stafford could afford them a couple of high draft picks. You can clear up some more salary. But when you listen to like Holmes talk, and when you listen to Campbell talk, they talked about the fact that you need leadership on this team. And they talked about you want hard workers that can play through injury. And I mean, like all these things that they're describing is what Stafford is. And so kind of like how I was talking about how they were foreshadowing Dan Campbell coming in as the coach, or foreshadowing Brad Holmes coming in as the GM, the talk that they're, when they're talking about players now, the things that they're talking about are all intangibles that Stafford has. And so my kind of gut is that they're not looking to shift Stafford, but if they view it as a rebuild, that they're going to need to be competitive in 2 years, I could see them wanting to deal him because I can say they can deal him, get a new guy in. The new guy is 2 years from now is going to be a lot more seasoned. You clear up money. Stafford would have been a free agent in 2 years anyways. And I understand that. So if you're pushing for a rebuild, Stafford is probably, you want Stafford traded most likely. But if you think that they can be competitive and they can keep pieces in place, then you probably want Stafford to stay. And I'm in that boat. I think he should stay. We can debate that all we want later. My point, I guess, was that when you kind of read between the lines, for me, it kind of looks like they're saying they want to keep Stafford now.
No, well, but I think they've got to say that now, no matter what.
Sure. No, but I'm not saying
like they know. Like Holmes doesn't know what he can get for him yet or anything.
Sure, so sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, so they'll say they want him.
Well, they've said that they're going to reevaluate everybody, and that includes him. So they've said that they're going to reevaluate him. But I'm saying when they're talking about the types of players that they want, he checks all those boxes off. And so we'll get into debating the roster later.
Yep.
I think that was the last thing I wanted to say on Campbell off the top of my
head. What about his quote that he wanted the job bad?
Yeah, I mean, look, that I think ties into what we were talking about earlier, where he's passionate about the city. He wants to build the city a winner. Both Holmes and Campbell have said almost identical things of saying they want to uplift the city. If they can turn the Lions into a winner, they know how that would impact the city and how the city would respond to that. And Campbell even brought up the fact of the situation he was in New Orleans, how they went through Katrina, they had a bad team, and then they found a way to rebound and lift the team back up. And he saw the team respond, the fans respond to a winning team. And he appreciates the fans and knows the fans. And he knows that if this team were to win, how the fans would respond. Now, honestly, I don't think he knows how absolutely crazy the fans would go if they actually turned this team into a winner, because the fans have been sitting on this for so long, but
it's a powder keg waiting to explode.
It is. If Dan Miller said it to Holmes, he said, if you can get a playoff win with this team, you might never buy a meal in this town again. That's how desperate this fan base is for a winner. And I totally get that. But both guys made a point to say they're trying to make the fans, they're trying to help do this for the fans. Now, I think that's an ownership-driven directive. Now, you know what I mean? I think the ownership is saying we've made so many mistakes, with Millen, and then we had to fire Mayhew when Martha took over. And then now the Quinn Patricia thing just blew up on our face, and, we gave him that extra year and it still didn't work out. I think they're thinking from a organizational standpoint, they've got to get the fans on their side, and getting a new GM and getting a new coach helps do that. It gives you new hope. You've got a new season, a new GM, a new coach. There's new hope coming up in Detroit right now. And so I think they're really trying to capitalize on that. And they're really pushing the narrative of doing it for the team, for the fans. And I hope it's true. I hope they really are. I hope, I believe Dan Campbell when he says it, you know what I mean? Because like I said, he's been here and he's seen it. So it's an interesting driving force behind both these guys. I do think when you look at both their histories, they both have ties to Detroit. I really do think that that there's some motivation here too, that goes a little bit beyond just winning for their jobs. They want to win for the city as well.
Let's do a quick post-mortem on Robert Saleh and Arthur Smith. So Robert, Coach Saleh ends up with the Jets and Smith ends up with the Falcons. Now I was a Smith guy and I think, were you more of a, I don't remember where you sat on Saleh.
I like Saleh. I didn't like Smith.
No, I remember you didn't like Smith, and you were giving me all these anecdotes about why I shouldn't like him either, and then I ended up not liking him as much.
Well, here's the trick. One of the things that Rod Wood casually said today was that both of the GM candidates from the Saints said that Dan Campbell was their first choice. Okay. Now, one of those candidates is Terry Fontenot, who's in Atlanta, and his coach in Atlanta is Arthur Smith. Now, a lot of fans are out there saying, oh, we lost out on Arthur Smith and we're settling for Campbell. Well, if Fontenot's first choice was Campbell and he ended up with Smith, that's not really the case, is it? Right? Now, we got to take some of this that Rod said with a grain of salt, because maybe Rod was just trying to make a point.
Yeah, but, conspiracy theory, Rod.
Sure. But if what he said is accurate and they had Campbell on the docket all along, it's entirely possible. Like, we were hearing rumors that Campbell was the leader before Arthur Smith took the job in Atlanta. Like, it's not like he took the job in Atlanta and all of a sudden Campbell's the front runner. Campbell was the front runner before Arthur Smith took the job. So, but it makes you think, like, if there's truth to that, then maybe, you know, Campbell was the preferred option. Now, it's hard to say because not every team is going to be receptive to the idea of a head coach with no coordinator experience, right? Yeah. And so maybe Atlanta was like, no. We want somebody more established, and that's fine. But this idea that Detroit lost out on these two candidates, I think, is misguided. That's just what it looks like from, you know, watching the headlines. I don't think Arthur Smith was the choice ahead of Dan Campbell in Detroit. I can't speak for Atlanta. I also think that I do think they were interested in Smith. I also think they were interested in Sala, but I think Sala wasn't interested in coming to Detroit, but not because of the Lions. I think there were other factors in play. And so, I don't want to get into them because I haven't verified a whole bunch of them, but there's more going on, I think, with the whole Sala thing than it was just, hey, Detroit wanted him and then he didn't want Detroit. I don't think it was that as cut and dry as it seems on the surface. Things are always more complicated than that. But I do think when they kind of looked at who they were interested in, I think Sala, Smith, and Campbell were in all in that same boat. And, I think they ended up, I don't know who was the front runner. Maybe it could have been a different one at different times, but I don't think they settled, I guess is my point. They didn't settle for Campbell. They arrived at Campbell because that was the choice that they wanted to make.
All right. One last note about Campbell before we move on that I wanted to bring up earlier. He challenged 3 plays as head coach of the Dolphins. He won every one of them.
Wow. Just to note.
Also, do you know if anybody's going to get their hands on all 12 Dolphin games and like go through? I wouldn't go through and see what would happen play by play, just what happened on every fourth down.
I wonder if they're on Game Pass. I wonder if they go back to 2015. I think they do. That's an interesting angle.
He given you article idea.
He had an idea, or he talked about the fact that when they played Buffalo that year, how he failed to call a timeout at the end of the half and it cost his team points that ended up costing him the game. And he talked about the fact that that was an experience that he learned from and now it's made him better. And so like and then he talked about how he's used these other experiences in order to improve his position as a head coach. And so I am interested to go back to that game to kind of see more about that as well. I'll have to check the Game Pass. Maybe we'll look into that on a future podcast. That's a good idea.
All right. So let's get away from Dan Campbell slightly. Let's talk about the coordinators he's going to try to bring in. And these are all rumors right now. We don't have any fact. Or no? Do we have fact when it comes to the defensive coordinator? Your face lit up there.
That's because Schefter tweeted it. Now the team has not officially announced it,
but yeah, it's a deal then.
Yeah, if Schefter tweets it, it's done, right? Aaron Glenn, the Saints' defensive backs coach, is going to be the Lions' defensive coordinator. Now,
all right, before you launch into it, concern, never been a play caller before.
Yeah, I look. We're going to see this with some of the offensive coordinators as well. A lot of them are all first-time play callers or first-time coordinators. And so now you're starting to see a lot of youth. You're seeing first-time GM, first-time head coach, first-time coordinator. Like, yes, there's obviously going to be concern that goes along with that. But the type of coach that Aaron Glenn is, I think makes him worth it.
Any more details on Glenn? He's coming from New Orleans. Yeah. Campbell, defensive backs coach.
Yeah. Now, if you remember,
a long time in the NFL.
Yeah, 15 years, right? He was a first-round pick, played in the NFL for 15 years. He played with Campbell in Dallas, 2006, I believe. Sean Payton was the offensive coordinator that year under Bill Parcells, if I'm not mistaken. And so they're familiar with each other. Now, they're both Texas A&M alums. Like you just said, they were both in with the Saints for the last 5 years. The Saints, man, they're secondary. Remember when we previewed the teams that we thought were going to be successful this year and teams that we thought were going to be the hardest opponents for the Lions, the Saints were number one. And that was because they were just good in so many spots. And so the fact that the Lions are dipping into the Saints roster here is a really good sign. Landing Aaron Glenn, the work he's done with their secondary is very impressive. Now they've put draft picks into that secondary, and that's fine. I mean, look, the Lions have put draft picks into the secondary too.
Right. And Lions are going to have to invest more draft picks into defense.
But they actually, I think he's the type of coach that can help rebound some of these guys. Okay. Like he's the type of coach that can take Okudu to the next level. Now weird fact, you know, when they're in high school, the kids are in high school and they go to one of those workouts called the opening where they get their star ratings. When Jeff Okudah was at the opening, his coach was Aaron Glenn. So they know each other is my point. So Jeff Okudah can take a next step with Aaron Glenn. Amani Owari can take a next step with Aaron Glenn. Tracy Walker can rebound and take a next step. Now you still have a hole. Do you think Tracy Walker's a free safety or do you think it's a strong safety? You got to figure that out. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Yep.
And Aaron Glenn will figure that out. And if you think Tracy Walker's a strong safety, well, guess what? The Saints free safety, Marcus Williams, is a free agent this year. And if you think he's a missing piece, you throw money at him and you bring him in. And now you've got, now your secondary is looking a lot better already because you're getting a guy in there who knows the system and who is an excellent player. You've got Trufant, who's on a big contract and questionable. You've got Justin Coleman, who's on a big contract and questionable. So you might have to replace your nickelback. But if you look at the Rams got a nickelback who's going to be a restricted free agent who they probably can't afford to pay, who's probably going to hit the market. And Holmes could very easily go after him because he went after him when he was the college scout director with the Rams previously. And if you go after him, now you're taking the next step towards shoring up your nickel. And so there's a couple free agents, and they're key free agents that set up nicely to kind of working over the secondary. Now, the linebackers are going to have to be completely redone. You're going to have to add a whole bunch of guys on the defensive line as well. Potentially the interior might have to be completely rebuilt. But the secondary is not as far away as it looks on the surface because the types of system that the Saints run, I think it works with the guys that they have. Now, the Lions ran a lot of man, not last year, but the 2 years prior. And then last year they started combining the two and you started to see some success when they did that. Now the Saints, if Aaron Glenn brings in the Saints system, they run a lot of man, a lot of two-man coverage, right? So you have two safeties in zone. So it's kind of like a cover two, except you're not running zone with the safety, with the corners, you're running man with it. So it's a cover two man, right? So you got two safeties up top. And that's going to put Tracy Walker in a better spot because Tracy likes being a little bit more free. He's more successful when he's a little bit more off the ball and roaming, and that's fine. That'll set Tracy up, I think, in a much better spot. If you bring in a guy like Marcus Williams or Josh Johnson from the Rams, you're putting another guy back there who can roam around and help that secondary. Okudah and or you can both play man. If you're counting on those guys, now all you're worrying about is that nickel spot. And so you can rebuild this team pretty quickly with if you are implementing the same scheme that the Saints run, because you're not far off with those secondary pieces. So I know I drifted off. We should be talking about Aaron Glenn here, but No,
you're excited. We'll we got to let you go.
But there's some key components here that I think the Lions can work with. And I don't know how Glenn's going to do, you know, with the other positions. Right. And they're still going to have to hire more coaches that are really good.
Strong position yes. coaches.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. 100%.
They're going to have more veteran position coaches.
Yes, I agree. But again, if you're implementing the Saints concepts, this is a team that blitzed about right in the middle of the pack of the league. But the second half of the season, they really dialed it up more than they did in the first half. And when they dialed it up more in the second half, they had huge amounts of success. So blitzing isn't out of the question at all. Like, we didn't see a whole lot of blitzing previously. We were always in the bottom five or whatever. Now this, if you're bringing in that the Saints defensive concept, blitzing is a thing that you're going to see a lot more. And even Dan Campbell said, you're going to see it from a corner. You're going to see it from a linebacker, whoever. You're going to see more creative concepts. So I like the Glenn hire. Look, it's another player, former first round pick, who's going to demand a lot of respect from these guys just based on the fact that he was in the league a decade and a half. And the fact that he was a first round pick, the fact that he played at a high level. He had three Pro Bowls. He had three all pro teams. Like, he has a resume that you have to believe in. But not only that, he's developed players with the Saints, and the fact that he's developed those players shows that he has these concepts in order to be a good developer, right? So the play calling, again, like you said, it's a mystery because we don't know, because he'll be a first year guy. But the other intangibles that he brings to the table are very exciting, and stuff that I think is it's reason to really be optimistic about the Glenn hire.
All right, and while we're on this tour of inexperienced coaches, the Lions interviewed Ravens quarterback coach James Urban to be their offensive coordinator. Now they haven't signed him yet, but that's their latest interview.
Yeah, they've had two interviews and they have two more in competition. And Urban's the one that came up first. He was the Eagles quarterback coach when they had McNabb and Vic. If you remember when they had both of them at the same time. He was the quarterback's coach then. Then he took a job under Marvin Lewis. That was with Andy Reid, if you recall. So he's learned under Andy Reid as a quarterback's coach in Andy Reid's system. That's a nice feather. Then he was a wide receivers coach for Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati, where he coached both Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, Lions last year, right? And then he went back to the Ravens, and he's now coaching Lamar. So you look at his resume and you say, Lamar, Vic, McNabb. Well, does Stafford fit that? Look, that doesn't matter. Like, this is not a guy who's stuck to, like, saying, I need a mobile quarterback in order to run an offense. It's not like that. He can work with a mobile quarterback. But if you recall, at that time in his career, McNabb was a pocket passer, very much a pocket passer. And while Atlanta never developed Michael Vick into a pocket passer, that's what he did in Philly. He started developing pocket passing skills, and a lot of those come from Urban. So he did with Vic what Atlanta could never do. And he had McNabb as a pocket passer. And the thing that, and one of the things that he's most credited with Lamar here, is he's credited him with his mechanics on helping him find a way to be a more efficient passer than he was in college. So he was a tough passer in college. It was very raw, and he's gotten better at it. There's still flaws, obviously, but I mean, this is a guy whose talent, you know, he's extraordinarily talented, and Urban has a lot of to do with teaching him a lot of the intangibles that go with the quarterback position. So there's a lot of appeal to him, and Marvin and Sanu were even, you know, tweeting at each other about it online when they saw that he had interviewed. So if you're a Marvin Jones fan, you might be pulling for Urban to get the job, because having a different coach in makes a big difference. And in this year, when the cap's going to be dropped and you're going to be looking around and not seeing the contracts that you want, it might be easy to come back to something that you're more, that you're comfortable with, especially if the coach is someone that you've had, you've spent 5 years with in Cincy.
All right. When it comes to the coaches that are already currently in the fold, the quarterback coach, Sean Ryan, he's expected to join the Panthers to be their quarterback coach.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what we're seeing here is a lot of the position coaches interviewing around the league, which Well, that's what I mean. I don't think the Lions have like fired them from their current position, but they're allowing them to interview and look for other jobs. So if Sean Ryan's going to take that job, it means Detroit will release him from his contract so he can take that job. It doesn't mean that the Lions fired him.
One thing that's eating at your heart right now is offensive line coach Hank Fraley. He's bouncing around doing some interviews.
Yeah. Last one was with Pittsburgh. Yeah, I really like Hank Fraley, but it sure looks like the Lions are going to do a total overhaul on the coaching, on all the coaches.
Marquise Williams, who's the assistant special teams coach, who was elevated, right, to be special teams coach once they fired Braden Coombs. He accepted a job with the Falcons and Arthur Smith.
Yeah, yeah. He did a nice job maintaining over the last 5 weeks. Yep. He's a guy who deserved the shot. Again, would have been nice to – he was a good coach who I would have liked to have seen return. But, again, if they're doing a full sweep, it's good to see him land somewhere else. The one I didn't put on the list is the one that we found out just before the podcast, and that's Bevel.
Oh, yeah, Darrell Bevel joining Urban Meyer in Jacksonville.
Yeah, again, I think Bevel returning to Detroit would have been tough without some elevated like assignments or titles or money.
Assistant head coach.
Yeah, right.
Head coach.
Yeah, but again, it sure looks like they're doing a full sweep of the coaching staff.
All right, Brad Holmes, been real busy. He's just getting to know Dan Campbell, and also he's been doing some restructuring to that front office.
Yeah, and it's not just Holmes, but it's, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's happened in that front office, right? The big thing that's happened, I guess, is that when they were interviewing Holmes, they had a lot of conversations with the COO of the Rams. Okay. And the COO was essentially the equivalent of Rod Wood with the Rams. Right. And they talked to them and they talked to Les Snead and they talked and they said, look, how's your organizational structure set up? What does it look like? And they've kind of gleaned some of that from them and said, hey, we're going to adapt some of these concepts that the Rams have in place in Detroit. And so what we have is a change in kind of an organizational tree. In the past, it was the owner, whether it's Martha or Sheila, and then below her was Rod Wood. And then below her was the GM, which was Bob Quinn. And then below Bob Quinn was all of the different front office guys and Matt Patricia. It's not like that anymore. Now they've made it so that the power structure isn't responsible to each other, and they're just responsible to Rod Wood. So underneath Rod Wood, you have Brad Holmes, the GM. And then you also have Dan Campbell, the head coach. And then you also have Mike Disner. Now, if you recall, Mike Disner was the capologist that was brought in 2 years ago. He, you know, he did great things in Arizona. He'd worked with the league previously. He grew up in West Bloomfield. This was a guy that they really liked. He understands the business side of it. He understands the money side of it. He understands the football side of it. And he's a guy that's been rising through the organization for a while. What they've done is they've taken Bob Quinn's responsibilities and they've shaved off a portion of it. Okay. Bob Quinn not only used to do like the scouting for the draft and the team, but he also used to organize like a lot of logistical stuff, like bringing guys in for tryouts, you know, team facilities, travel plans. He used to be oversee all of that kind of things. And what they've done is they've taken all those kind of logistical nightmare things off of Brad Holmes and said, and they've given them to Mike Disner, and they've said, Holmes, all you're going to focus on is this team. All we want is your scouting. We want the team to be built, and that's what your job is. Dan Campbell, your job is just to turn the team into a successful team that can win. And now Dissner, you're going to handle all the cap stuff. You're going to handle all the salaries. You're going to handle who is coming in for all the logistical, like if you're bringing guys in for what tryouts or whatever, right? And like all the trips and all. Dissner's going to handle all of that tiny kind of logistical stuff that previously was on the GM. They've separated those duties, and that's going to make Brad Holmes' job a lot easier and give him an opportunity to be a lot more impactful. Now, at the same level, you also have Chris Spielman, who, again, is not responsible to anybody, but just kind of is hovering around helping everybody. But it's a totally different concept in organizational structure, and it's one that has the GM and head coach on the same level, cooperating instead of one answering to the other, like you see in other organizations. This is a concept they use like in Seattle. And so they've used this in a couple others as well, but Seattle's like really the prime one. And again, the Rams is the kind of a prime one. But this is a neat concept that kind of distributes the responsibilities a little bit more fluidly. And it's easier to assign and responsibilities, and also I guess assign success and blame as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out. I think it's good that Holmes can just focus on, you know, not the operation side of football, but the football side of football. It'll be, especially as he's getting his feet wet as being a GM, having the four different heads at the top all competing with Rod Wood for his attention. And, you know, it, who knows best? We'll see how that works out. Hopefully it works out in the Lions' favor. It'll be better for us if it does. I don't know if you want to talk about Holmes and his approach to scouting, evaluating. We don't have a ton of time left, but go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the big thing here is that you just want, I just want to reiterate what we kind of brought up earlier, was that while he's based in old school scouting, he's not shying away from analytics, and he's willing to understand what analytics are, and he says he's learned how to apply them in different situations. Like, this concept of analytics doesn't apply to this position, but it does apply to another. Or you know, you're looking for this particular skill set in here, and then but not necessarily there. So, you know, he's been doing this, the scouting director of scouting, for long enough that he's really grasped the concept of how to marry these two schools of thought into one. And I think that's something that, again, is super, super encouraging.
All right. And also his role, he's also talked about what his role is in building and maintaining, you know, a winning squad here with the Lions.
Right. I mean, like, look, you got to think, when he was scouting players previously, we talked about this last podcast, the Rams haven't had first round picks in like 5 years, 4 or 5 years. Right. And so he's had to be able to find value with the lower end picks, and he's been able to do that. And so if you can introduce that into Detroit and you can find success out of these guys that aren't just first rounders, well, it's going to go a lot further to finding that success, right? He wants his team to be competitive now, but he also understands that he wants his team to be competitive 5 years from now. And so he has a neat game plan, and we kind of glossed over his press conference this week, because it feels like it was last week, but it was really what, like 48 hours ago. Yep. That's just how this week has gone. But both of them are both these press conferences this week were very interesting. And while there is a lot of generic stuff that was brought up, there's also some really kind of cool concepts that each of them talked about that are encouraging.
All right. So moving on from Campbell and Holmes, and we'll be talking a lot more about both of them as the weeks wear on. Lions have $12.8 million in rollover cap space. That number will probably grow once they start cutting some veterans.
Well, the 12.8 is what they're rolling over from last year, right? And so they actually don't have 12 available. They have only around like four available, but they actually would have been 8 million over the cap if they didn't roll this money over. So rolled. Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. They're actually dead middle of the league in available cap space with that 4 million. In the NFC North, all other three teams are over the cap, even with all of their rollover. They're still over the cap. They're all, if the cap were to end today at 175, then they would all be in, they'd all have to make cuts without adding any players. Like, that's where the other three teams are. The Lions are actually in the best shape in their division. They do have right now 4 million in the bucket. Okay. Now,
they got to weasel some more cap space.
Well, again, remember we talked earlier, we said there's about eight guys on this roster that I think can get cut to free up cap space. And that there, you could free up around 20 million or more in cap space by cutting some of these guys. So, and then it gets a little trickier. Now, right now the cap is set at 175. That's the floor. Now it can go up. Ways it can go up is when they evaluate their profitability at the end of the season. So the salary cap is set on profitability of the season with the
COVID. They'll have to have a best of three Super Bowl. And that cap will go up a bit.
Well, here's the thing. Advertising, online stuff, adding a 17th game next year, all of these things help increase profitability, right? And while they took a huge loss this year in their profits, the NFL did, they are actually going to, they're setting things up to help them soften the blow. And so the salary cap is based on their profits or loss. And right now they're going to lose. And so the salary cap looks like it's going to drop. If it drops, it won't drop any further than 175, and it can go up from there. So if they didn't lose as much, salary cap goes up. If they anticipate more revenue coming in because of the things they're adding, that salary cap goes up. If they meet and renegotiate, that salary cap goes up. So right now it's at 175. The NFLPA president thinks it's going to be at least 185, if not more. So if it's 185, that's another 10 million you can give to the Lions right there, right? And then so now if you cut 20 million, you add 10 million in there, now you're looking at, you know, now you're at 34 million, if not more. And now you're closer to like top 10 in the league instead of the NFC North, the rest of the teams in the NFC North are still struggling to get out at this point. So they're not in as bad a shape as it sounds. Okay. And honestly, the number's going to be low, but it's going to be low for everyone. Look, the Saints right now, if it stays at 175, the Saints are 100 million over the cap right now. Okay. Now, if Breeze retires, that's going to free up a chunk, but they're still going to have to cut guys. And if they cut guys, you better believe the Lions are going to be looking at who they cut, right? And they've got free agents that they're not going to be able to bring back, like Maurice Williams, right? So, like, I know Maurice is a guy that people are going to say, I don't know, man, the Saints are going to want to keep him. The Saints literally cannot keep him. He's going to go somewhere else. Why not follow Aaron Glenn, right? So, it sounds bad. But it's really not as bad as it sounds.
It's the Lions. It always.
Well, I'm just saying. So they've rolled over this money. It's got them in the black. And now we'll see how much the cap goes up from the league. It can go up. I mean, it could go up 20 million. And if it goes up 20 million, all the better. And if you make cuts, it could go up 20 million even more. You know what I mean? So like there's a lot of opportunity for this cap to increase. But right now they're at least in the positive, which is something that 13 teams in the NFL can't say.
Yeah, no, it's one thing about Quinn. He didn't massacre the cap on his way out. Like it's, yeah, like you said, it's not great, but they still have money, and they'll get guys. They'll be able to get their whole draft class signed. And speaking of the draft class,
well, I want to pause you for a second. The guy who helped Quinn, who drove the bus on the cap, is Mike. There. Mike Disner, right? Yeah. And so he's still in house. So you still have that guy who managed the cap prior who's still going to be managing the cap. So there, I actually am encouraged by where they are cap wise.
All right. So NFL Combine, it's going to be altered due to COVID-19. Now, Eric, I think all you really care about is whether it's still on TV.
Well, that's the thing. It won't. It's not going to be an indie. Yeah. It's the indie showcase is canceled this year. What they're going to do is they're going to try and mainstream pro days. So the way that's going to work is the NFL is planning on sending an official to the pro days to explain to them how they have to set up and how they have to execute the timing of all of the events, how they're going to execute the drills and stuff like that. And so essentially what they're going to have is each school is going to try and have their own little combine. Now, I have no idea how this is going to work. And I'm not sure they even have a full clarity on how it's going to work, but they are going to essentially, they've eliminated Indianapolis this year. It's gone. Are they going to do...
It's interesting. Is it because the NCAA tournament's going to be there at the same time? Like, what was the reasoning? Because it would seem to me if they got everybody into one place...
You could keep them. You could bubble them.
Yeah, you bubble them. You'd be testing them daily and everything. Like, you think there'd be less risk.
Hey, man, I'm...
Because somebody's pro day is going to get wiped out.
I am 100% with you. But they don't want to bubble everybody. And I think some of the driving force is that you get thousands of media people that go there that now aren't going to be able to go there. But again, I think you could still just bubble it with the participants and the coach and the teams and whatnot, but they don't want to do that. Instead, what they're going to do is there's like four little hubs that they're going to create where they're going to test people medically, because there's four different training facilities that get a lot of use. One's in like Florida, one's in Texas, one's in California. I forget what the other one is.
No way. Those in the three South. Locations, who would have thought?
I know.
Those aren't football hotbeds.
and so these training facilities are housing a lot of these players right now. And so they're going to send all the doctors to one area and just check everybody that they can in that one area.
Send the combine to them.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, right? Now, there's no word on if these pro days are going to be televised. They typically televise the SEC ones on ESPN or maybe NFL Network. I forget which one, but there's possibility that they, you know, we get some televised stuff, but we have no idea how receptive these colleges are going to be to the NFL coming in and telling them how to run their show. Typically the pro days, there's a script from the school, and then the coaches from the NFL request certain things to happen, and then they will volunteer coaches to run certain drills, and that's the way it's always done. But finding a universality of a pro day would be really, really cool, but there's also potential for it to be very flawed as well, right? And so this is very much a work in progress, and I don't know how it's going to play out.
Yeah, that's interesting. So would Michigan, I'm sure you don't know this answer, but say like Michigan has their pro day, Michigan State has their pro day, or is there only going to be one of them's going to have it and the other kids are going to go to that school? Because also, don't forget, like Eastern and Central and Western would send their guys to like Michigan State or, you know, to wherever, right?
Sure. I was wondering if they would, if colleges would be willing to double up like that. Like every college from the state of Michigan goes to Michigan and for a pro day. Now, would Michigan be willing to share facilities? Because
not the Jim Harbaugh, I know.
But again, because like these colleges use these as recruiting opportunities, right? When Ohio State puts five guys in the first round, that's a heck of a draw for the high school kids that are watching. Oh, look at Ohio State. Just put five kids in the first round. I want to go to Ohio State, right? And I'm sure Michigan isn't going to want to give any of that up to Michigan State, right? But in the grand scheme of things, if your intentions are for the player and trying to get the player the best opportunity to get into the NFL, I do think there's an opportunity for that. So, but again, now are you getting too big? Now, if you're including all these guys, are you going to have too many guys? There's a lot of things that are going to, a lot of details that still have to be worked out.
Yeah. See, now when you bring up that there's all these hubs that are going to throw the doctors at, they should just have the combine, three step combine or four at those hubs. Would seem to make more sense to me than, because if those guys are all together anyways, you know,
no,
what's the difference of just having four different combine? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, they do that. They do that with the guys not invited to the main combine. They call them regional combines, right? You could essentially regional combines. And I think that's an opportunity that maybe they haven't, or maybe they're not willing to explore, but they have, I haven't heard of it anyways. So I don't know. It's going to be different. And I tell you what, for those who are eagerly anticipating the next, you know, benchmark systems, the HIB that we want to create.
Coming.
It's gonna, well, I'm gonna work on it and I'm still gonna go after it. But if we're missing,
it'll be rough in year one.
It's gonna, yeah. I don't know how much information we're gonna be able to glean. Hopefully a lot of this data is still gonna get published and it'll allow us to be interactive more than just, I'm sure the teams are going to get a lot of all this information like they always do, but publicly I'd love to be able to have access to that. And I know enough people who have contacts within organizations that can get info like this, that hopefully it'll find its way out if it's not publicized.
Soft brag warning.
No. But I mean, like, there's enough guys that come across this stuff, right? Like, sure. So hopefully it finds its way out. Right. Hopefully it finds its way to us and then we can do something cool with it.
All right. That's about all we have. There's one more note. I saw this is Ford Hamp. She's talking about Calvin Johnson and how she wants him back in the fold.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that all plays out. Yeah. Who knows?
It's the same story, right? I mean,
yeah.
Wasn't anything really new.
No.
And
it was worth a mention.
Yeah, he is still scorned, and I don't know.
Hey, I get it.
No, I do too. But even if they were willing to pay him back that money, I still think he's been rubbed the wrong way, that he doesn't feel receptive. And the same thing, it's the same thing from Detroit every time. We're willing to talk to him. We've reached out. We want to talk to him, but it's a two-way street. And right now on his side, he's saying, I want nothing to do with him. And so, yeah, it's a tough one, especially because he's coming up for the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing, the Hall of Fame, yep.
So.
All right.
You know what? Yeah, well, we got a couple more reviews. We're up to 330.
Yeah, which is great. Now.
And we got one. We got one written one from Frame Train 626. Oh no, 262. Man, I am tired.
Yeah, no, dip.
Very nice. Appreciate that, Frame Train 262. Man, I tell you, we've got a lot of people that are supporting us out there, and it doesn't go away. I feel like it's getting stronger every week. I feel like, you know, the word of mouth continues to spread, and it's just awesome. Patreon's actually picking up, which is great. And so I'm working on stuff behind the scenes for that. I'm slowly building like four or five things all at the same time, free agent lists, salary cap roster, where they're at. I got a bunch of little projects in the works. I'm going to have to just at one point, just put a cap in it and just upload it and get it out to people. But you know, once we get settled with this whole coaching staff and all this jazz, I'm going to update that board. I'm going to send it out and the stuff I've got a lot of stuff going on right now that'll hopefully, make the wait worth it.
All right. Yep. Thanks everybody for all those great reviews. And thank you for listening. Eric's got to get some sleep. So we're going to wrap it up for today. Enjoy the conference championships this weekend. And if you dig deep into football, the Michigan High School State Championships are we knew this was coming, but you know, this is the longest high school football season ever.
Yeah.
They're also being contested on Friday and Saturday. So until next time, let's go Lions.